Welcome to the Daily Wrap Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So we have a very good show for you today. A lot of very important information, one in particular that I'm really not seeing in many other places besides two outlets from which I'm sharing them with you today. And I find it to be an incredibly important story, one of which I think a lot of what's going on today is trying to distract you from paying attention to how it's developing. And it's a very important story, others of which are simply stories I'm choosing to point out of why we should be skeptical and why we should be aware of how these things can be used to distract us, even when they're rooted in actual information. I also want to, before I get into the stories, I want to throw a quick shout out to an anonymous donation we got, a nice Bitcoin donation that we received yesterday, and just, it's anonymous, so I really don't know who to thank, and I just, if you're watching right now, I'd like you to know, truly thank you, and we all appreciate the support, and, that's how this channel continues to go forward. So those of you that believe in what we're doing, be sure you find ways to support us, even if that's sharing this video. So let's get into some of this important information today, because truly, I think this is, in my opinion, the most important story happening today that I really don't see anywhere else. So remember where you saw this first, because it's important to recognize where you're getting this information. But as always, as I always say, come to your own conclusions about this. Don't just listen to what I have to say, or anybody for that matter. Gather the information, lay out what's important, and come to your own conclusions based on everything we're discussing here today. So the first article today, coming from southfront.org, as well as shared by Global Research, which was where I first saw it. The article is that I saw in Global Research, which the title I thought was a little more accurate, entitled "New Threats Against Assad Accuse Syrian Government of Chemical Attacks Against Civilians." Obviously, the title here, we can see France, UK send new threats to Assad government, with a great video coming from southfront.org discussing what's going on here and how this all comes about. And I'll make sure that video, as well as the article, as always, is in the show notes for you to check out for yourself. This is a very big story. This is something we have been reporting on, we have been covering, we have been preparing for. We know what's happening in this area, and Idlib is a very important location being covered on exclusively almost by Southfront, as well as many other outlets. But in regard to their coverage, that seems to be their main focal point today about what's going on in Idlib, what's going on in Syria, and the truth around that information. And it's important that you keep an open mind on all this, especially for those that may have doubts about the previous false flags, which, as far as I'm concerned, my opinion, are without a doubt false flag events that were created to justify the actions we already saw. Coming from mainstream people such as Robert Fisk, OAN, Vanessa Bealey, many other people that were on the ground that have verified, as well as the Hague report saying that there was no chemical attack in Douma, but also going back before that in the past events. This is how these things work. Justifying the aggression by the West by creating a false event. And we know this has taken place in the past, as far as I'm concerned. We know what's happening with the White Helmets, and we know that they've been there in Idlib, even asked to be shipped there. Now, the real point we want to make in this article is whether or not there are extremists there, which is something that the West has almost outright denied. So very important information to get in with this story. So according to numerous reports, militant groups are constantly violating the ceasefire in the Idlib de-escalation zone, where the ceasefire was violated at least 17 villages and settlements in western Aleppo, northern Latakia, and northern Hama. So it's interesting to already see that there has been, this is how this ceasefire dynamic gets manipulated, how they talk about how the United States, or rather Russia, and Syria violate the ceasefire, but in reality, the ceasefire does not even apply to the extremists that are there, which is a misunderstanding of how that entire thing works. But so what we're seeing now here is that these groups that are indeed backed by Western powers are violating the very ceasefire that's supposed to be taking place. Now, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly Jabhat al-Nusra, the Syrian branch of al-Qaeda, is currently sabotaging any peaceful dialogue between the opposition and the government. Of course, which is the ultimate point, and has started preparation for its own offensive on government positions in southern Idlib. Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, a leader of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, visited the contact line between militants and the Syrian Arab Army in northern Latakia. Now, this SSA, we're talking about the Syrian government forces here. And the appearance of al-Jalani in the area once again shows that the terrorist group remains the most powerful force in the militant-held part of Idlib. which many mainstream media and Western powers have argued that there is no extremist presence in these areas. And again, remembering that the White Helmets had requested to go back to this incredibly extremist dominated area, which says quite a lot about what they're actually doing. As we already know, the White Helmets have exclusively operated in Al-Qaeda-held areas, and this is exactly another point to compound that exact concept. And his appearance dealing with the SSA shows you the opposite of what the West is ultimately claiming, that this is an extremist-held area dominated by Western-backed Al-Qaeda factions, which constantly change their name to avoid general recognition by the people that are even trying to pay attention to what's going on there. Now, while the SSA is deploying additional reinforcements in northern Hama and Latakia, preparing for expected battle against Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups in northwestern Syria, the U.S. and U.K. and France have once again resumed their propaganda campaign to accuse the Syrian government of carrying out chemical attacks against civilians. Once again, this tired, worn-out effort to continue to accuse Assad and the Syrian government of carrying out chemical attacks against civilians, which doesn't make it not possible. Of course it's possible, but as always, we need to stand back and recognize the common sense factors that are always pointed out in this. First of all, why would he ever do something like this when he's clearly winning this battle? They try to make it claim, well, he's a maniac murderer, which is obviously disproved when you realize that all of the civilians that the United States claimed were suffering under his rule flood back into his areas once he takes them back from the Western-backed extremists that had been wreaking havoc in their towns and areas, contradicting everything that they're basically saying. But yet again, we have to realize that all of the previous claims have also been debunked. And that's not hypothetical, that's not opinion. They have in fact been debunked. Even by Mattis and people within the U.S. government have openly, more than once, asserted that they do not have evidence to back up these claims. More than once, and I will include those in the show notes for you to look out for yourself, to look at for yourself. But what's interesting is, regardless of the fact that they continue to outright claim they don't have evidence to support these accusations, they reassert them as fact later down the line. Very important to take in with all of this. Now, obviously, the fact that somebody could carry out a chemical attack on either side is still absolutely possible. So we should never take either side as absolute fact. But as always, we simply have the facts to look at from historical events to today. And every single thing we can see points to the fact that this is yet another agenda carried out by the West to justify more action. As Brandon Tuberville has pointed out, as Whitney Webb has pointed out, as Vanessa Bealey has pointed out more than once, that this is the plan and has been being prepared for a long time. And as we're seeing them get destroyed in Syria, as they're losing their offensive, the Western-backed forces, this is seemingly what they're trying to carry out. Now, on August 21st, three countries released a joint statement condemning the alleged use, which is interesting, condemning something that they have yet to prove, chemical weapons by the Damascus government. Also saying, quote, "We will respond appropriately to any further use of chemical weapons by the Syrian regime, threatening Syria with new attacks." Always, of course, using the word regime, which is typically associated with some kind of undemocratic force, knowing that Syrian elections are incredibly democratic, even more so than the United States to most regard, yet they still use that word to drive that home. Interestingly, as always in every past event, this seems like a signal to their extremist forces on the ground. "We'll respond to any future events," as if telling them to carry out an event because they'll respond regardless of how it was carried out, assuming it was Assad, which is always the way this has gone forward. Experts expect that if the Idlib operation of the SSA is started, which is about to begin, the chemical weapons issue may once again be used by militants and their supporters, the Western-backed forces, United States, France, the UK, to justify military actions against government forces by foreign powers. Now, this cannot be overstated. This cannot be ignored. This is a huge statement, and every time in the past they've made this statement, it has been followed by false accusations about chemical attacks. That has to be, we can't overstate the importance of this statement being made in conjunction with the US, UK, and France. They're essentially priming us for the next event, as we've been warning about for a very long time. Now, again, we have to remember that the White Helmets were requesting to be transferred to Idlib by the US and UK and France when they were evacuating them from a place they were supposedly helping the civilians, which is interestingly ironic, when, you know, contradictory when you really think about it. But now we know that there's White Helmet presence in Idlib, which is the very group with al-Nusra, which is the same group we're talking about in regard to the al-Qaeda faction, in Idlib currently. Just all the pieces lined up, ready to go. We've already reported about the false flag plans in Idlib. Russia warned about having actual intelligence about people on the ground preparing for a false flag. This is news we've been reporting on for a very long time. So keep this in mind. We need to pay attention to what's going on there, and don't let everything else going on distract you from the reality of foreign policy being carried out by the United States to achieve an imperialistic agenda that we've been pointing out for a very long time. It has nothing to do with what the American people actually want. This is the U.S. oligarchy in conjunction with other striving to be authoritarian nations seeking to overthrow the Assad government as they've been planning to do for decades, verifiably so. So we'll continue to cover this story, and a major shout out to South Front for keeping up on this story. I recommend you check them out as well and fund any of these independent media outlets that are actually covering the facts on the ground and not feeding you Western propaganda like every other mainstream channel out there. So moving on to the next story and discussing stories that are or could be distraction and definitely something to watch in regard to possible distraction measures and just simple propaganda in ways to keep you, you know, distracted from what's really going on in the world, which is so much what we see today, but is still worthy of reporting on. Coming from ZeroHedge.com, Cohen willing to tell Mueller about Trump's conspiracy to collude with Russia. Now, first of all, this is simple statements. Obviously, I'm already seeing things out there, all proof. We have proof. As if people seemingly have forgotten what that word actually means. People can say anything. People have said a lot of things that have yet to come to pass. But we don't know what's happening. And I'll tell you point blank, if Cohen comes out with something that has verifiable, deep, without fail proof showing that Donald Trump did something illegal, I'll be the first to support it and talk about it. I'm no fan of Donald Trump. I'm no fan of either side of the two-party paradigm. But if somebody broke the law and did something outside of the best interest of the American people, they need to be held accountable for it. That being said, everything we've seen thus far about the Russiagate investigation has been an absolute zero. Nothing. No proof, no facts, no evidence. Everything has been a stretch, reaching manipulation. Even the Russian people that Mueller has indicted have amounted to nothing. Even the one that showed up saying, let's go, let's have this, let's see your proof, Mueller has still to this point dragged his feet and said, whoa, wait, no, we're not ready. Why would that be the case if he actually had evidence to support the fact that there was a person that he had to indict? Ask yourself these questions. Now, with this moving forward, it's interesting to see Cohen, Trump's previous lawyer, to ultimately come out and now say, I have evidence of exactly everything they've been saying. Seems a little too perfect, but we should consider it as anything. As I said, I have no stake in either side of this argument. I'm simply presenting the facts. And thus far, there is absolutely zero to reinforce all of the claims the left is ultimately making about these Russia collusion allegations. So let's look at this. This is an interesting story. So Cohen's lawyer, Lanny Davis, said that his client has knowledge about computer hacking and collusion, and is willing to speak with special counsel Robert Mueller about a conspiracy to collude with Russia during the 2016 presidential election. Now, first, remember, I don't know why we have to continue to assert this, and these people, this lawyer, the mainstream media, these people, they know that there is no crime of collusion. There's no crime. You can't be arrested for collusion. There's no law in the books that says collusion is against the law. There is, however, a crime of conspiracy. But of course, that requires evidence to support that. Collusion is simply an idea, talking about how they work together. It's a real flimsy, you know, foggy idea of an idea of something that they want to point out. That's why this word has been used, to manipulate the American public to continue to talk about collusion. But it's interesting to say that so far, these are just statements being made that are already being represented as much more than statements, as fact, as we'll see in a second. Now, Cohen, who pleaded guilty on Tuesday to helping President Trump pay hush money to two women, wants to tell Mueller that Trump knew of an infamous 2016 meeting at Trump Tower and the Russian hacking of democratic institutions before they took place. According, he told MSNBC, deciding that any attorney-client privilege in this case is strictly optional, which is also interesting to realize that this is a violation of attorney-client privilege. But understanding here that we have mountains of evidence already showing that this was not a hack. This is something they just outright ignore. Many reputable people, people like Seymour Hersh, and have come out and ultimately pointed out that, look, this was not a hack. The DNC was not hacked. This was an inside leak. There is mountains of information we could get into over an entire show that demonstrate very clearly that this wasn't a hack whatsoever. So the fact that he's already claiming that, for me, is an immediate red flag. I wonder, and we should be asking ourselves, regardless of what side of this you want to put yourself on, whether or not this is something being coerced, whether this is something being created to carry out the same allegations that they've been trying to root for a very long time. Even if they'll never come to fruition, simply Cohen saying this is already being heralded as the biggest success of all time, which is interesting. Now, his attorney goes on to say, quote, not just about the obvious possibility of a conspiracy to collude. See, interesting how he included the word conspiracy there, because that's what makes it an actual crime, and corrupt the American democracy system in the 2016 election, which the Trump Tower meeting was all about, but also knowledge about the computer crime of hacking and whether or not Mr. Trump knew ahead of time about that crime and even cheered it on. That's coming from his lawyer. Putting this forward as if things need to already be taken, like literally calling for people to already take action. Davis said on Wednesday that, quote, there is no dispute that Trump committed a crime. Before these are statements, remember, before this has even come to court, nothing has come to pass yet. And he's already making these claims that there is no dispute that he committed a crime. And he repeated that Cohen has knowledge of a Russian conspiracy, even if it was still unclear if Cohen or Davis have any evidence or proof to substantiate their allegations, saying these things point blank. We have to understand that this is how this is being manipulated. Even if these are true, this country seems to have lost a sense of itself of how these things are supposed to take place. There's supposed to be a trial, supposed to be a case that we investigate and evidence presented, not just allegations and statements that then get heralded as proof of everything they've been saying. This is a very dangerous way that this country is moving forward. I have very little faith in the judicial system today in general, because it's completely hijacked by the elite. If you have simple money, you can make what you want happen today. And this is what we're seeing, just like this. The mainstream media pushing forward allegations, conjecture, as evidence. Very dangerous. Now, important thing to understand here, if Trump knew about the payments and that they were illegal, to the hush money we're talking about, which is kind of a separate event, which is interesting how these are being tied together. Same like we're talking about with Manafort, the idea that these tax crimes and foreign bank accounts, these things that, you know, maybe the foreign bank account, but things that don't really tie in with this idea of a Russian investigation. So why are they being discussed here? It's interesting. And he says, if he knew about the payments and that they were illegal, he could, all these things, if he knew about them and they were illegal, he could be charged with violating election law for accepting illegal payments and not disclosing them. That is a lot of hypothetical to prove in a court of law. Very interesting. And also said that Paul Ryan, who's also a campaign finance lawyer with Common Sense, current Justice Department guidelines state that a sitting president cannot be indicted and that any wrongdoing should be referred to Congress for impeachment proceedings. Apparently those guidelines are not binding, however, but that's an interesting point to add in all of this, as people are already calling for criminal charges, which is just interesting to see all this develop. Now, I stress extreme caution. This is a story that I have rarely even been covering, because it's still conjecture. I wait to report on things that we can actually have factual information to back up. These are hypothetical claims made by someone who has yet to even present them in court. And yet this is the headline story all over the mainstream media. Ask yourself why that is. These are supposed to be journalists reporting on the facts of the case, and that's not what's ever happening in regard to this. So be very skeptical, but I wanted to report on it today to give you the basic outline of what this is all about. And in my opinion, even if these are true, this will be the story that gets forced into your consciousness to drive you away from things like what's going on in Syria or Saudi Arabia or Yemen, like we're going to be talking about today, as they brushed across that story with a wildly disingenuous nature and then forced these hypothetical conjecture-based tabloid stories right back into the front of your TV. Keep that in mind, but be open to anything. I'm not trying to tell you this isn't true. Maybe something did happen, and if it did, we'll move forward from there. But there is no reason to jump to conclusions based on hypothetical accusations. That is simply irresponsible. Moving on to the next story, coming from the MiddleEastEye.com, entitled Saudi Arabia Seeks Death Penalty for Women Activists. This is an important story, not only because it demonstrates how one of the closest, staunchest allies of the United States is one of the worst human rights violators in the world, also a monarchy and wildly authoritarian, but that it demonstrates all of the lies and propaganda that have been pushed forward about how Saudi Arabia is some kind of a reforming nation, that they're changing their ways and they're moving in a different direction, which is categorically untrue. And this story is a pretty clear indication of that. So Saudi Arabia's public prosecutor is seeking the death penalty against five women human rights activists from the kingdom's eastern province currently on trial in a secretive terrorism court. Nonviolent crimes, activism, fomenting unrest, and they're seeking the death penalty. Think about that. Among the detainees is Isra Al-Ghanem, who Saudi activists said was the first woman to face the death penalty for rights-related work, possibly. Charges against her include incitement to protest and providing moral support to rioters. And that's the death penalty. Incitement to protest and moral support to rioters. Obviously, incitement, rioters, words, these are meant to make it seem like something violent when it's ultimately not, demonstrably so. According to Sarah Leah Whitson, Middle East director at the Human Rights Watch, quote, any execution is appalling, but seeking the death penalty for activists like Isra Al-Ghanem, who are not even accused of violent behavior, is monstrous. And as much as I could point out many terrible things about Human Rights Watch, I agree with that statement. Activists said the trial was ongoing and denied social media reports that apparently the detainees had already been executed. Interesting little tidbit there. These are claims on social media. Nonetheless, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that this is all a big show and that they've already been executed. This is the way that Saudi Arabia has conducted itself many times in the past. Saudi Arabia, which I said is an absolute monarchy where public protests and political parties are banned, has enacted some high-profile social and economic reforms in recent years under Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. They have, however, been accompanied by a crackdown on dissent, with dozens of clerics, intellectuals, and activists arrested in the past year, including women who had campaigned for the right to drive in the deeply conservative Muslim country. Again, showing you, demonstrating that the very concept that they pushed forward in our consciousness about Saudi Arabia has finally allowed women to drive, which, by the way, in Iran has been going on for a very long time. When we see that the very people who actually protested to get that to pass are now actively being cracked down upon. Saudi Arabia has previously executed Shiite activists on what rights groups call politically motivated charges. Executed. It views protests among Shiites in the context of tensions with Shiite power and regional rival Iran, which it has accused of fomenting the unrest. Of course, how it always ties back to Iran. It's very interesting to see how this plays out. As we can see, the country like Iran, which is cast in this terrible demonizing light, is nothing like what's happening in Saudi Arabia. In fact, a democratic country with a democratically elected government, as much as you would never hear that from the mainstream media. To recognize what's really going on there and to think that this is not what represents Americans, this is not the kind of country that the United States pretends to be protecting and pushing forward around the world. Literally the exact opposite. If Iran or Syria did even a fraction of what Saudi Arabia or Israel, for that matter, are doing on a regular basis, it would be headline news every single day. So keep that in mind. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from mintpressnews.com, and in relation to the story that we've been covering intensely for a very long time, for years now, and there's now a new edge to it that's making things even worse. Entitled, Saudi Economic War Triggers Yemen Currency Collapse and Worsens Plight of a War-Torn Nation. The new arm of this is, as always, the economic war, as if these horribly oppressed and just tortured population needs any other addition to this war. But now we're seeing, of course, the U.S.-backed Saudi economic war triggering a collapse of their currency, continuing the starvation tactics and the manipulation of everything that the Yemenis hold dear whatsoever. This is a very sad story. And again, we should recognize this is happening with U.S. support, even after the bus of 50 kids that was bombed, that was disingenuously reported on by the media and forgotten the very next day. So more than 3 years of U.S.-Saudi-led coalition war against Yemen has already created the world's largest food security emergency, with millions of people facing starvation. The UN has described Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian disaster, estimating something over 20 million people who could die from starvation by the end of the year. 20 million people. Let that set in. Last week, panic entered Yemeni local markets and houses after a plunge in the value of the Yemeni rial, accompanied by increasing prices for basic foodstuffs. Those who still have money rush to convert their savings to USD or buy gold. But most Yemenis now face two grim prospects, either to die by US-Saudi airstrikes or to die of starvation. Quote, a month ago, I was buying 50 kilos of wheat with 7,000 rials, which was $12. Now it costs 13,000 rials. Now, how can I bring food for my children? Asked 50-year-old Abdul Khalik Al-Kulani, father of seven and a civil servant employed by Red Sea Port Corporation in Hodeidah. Al-Kulani then said, quote, if they do not die by Saudi airstrikes, they will die of hunger. We do not have a choice. Average individuals, not Houthi rebels supported by Iran, average Yemeni people who are horrifically suffering at the hand of U.S.-backed Saudi coalition efforts. Facing this new type of bombardment, Al-Kulani, along with tens of thousands of Yemenis, took to the streets of Sana'a Friday to condemn what they called, quote, the economic war launched against their country by the U.S.-Saudi-led coalition, which has decimated the ability of most Yemenis to purchase food, accelerating the spread of famine in a nation that imports nearly 90% of its nutritional needs. We also recently talked about how $5.5 billion had been basically taken from them with the bombing of the fishing vessels, over 270, I believe, over the past so many years in the port of Hodeidah, which is vast majority of where their food comes from. Think about that. The U.S.-Saudi-led coalition has used systematic economic strangulation as a weapon of war, as we've seen the U.S.-backed efforts all around the world, Venezuela being a perfect example, targeting jobs, infrastructure, food markets, factories, and the provision of basic services. The coalition claims it is targeting economic sites being used for military purposes, of course, which it therefore considers legitimate military targets. Also remember, they considered the bus full of 50 children a legitimate military target, which the United States completely supported and pretended not to address the fact as if they somehow had a logical justification for killing 50 children on the way to a field trip. A legitimate military target. Simply saying that does not make it the case. And of course, allowing them to investigate themselves, I'd wonder how well their investigation of that bus bombing is going so far. I guess we have to wait and see, as the Saudis investigate themselves and likely find themselves not guilty. The coalition has deliberately sought to inflict widespread damage to Yemen's production capacity. According to a statement by the Legal Center of Rights and Development to Mint Press News, Saudi airstrikes targeted 14,375 civilian economic structures. Let me say that again. Saudi airstrikes targeted 14,375 civilian economic structures, including factories, commercial warehouses, food, medicine, electricity, and fuel supplies. Many of these economic facilities were forced to curtail their production, and hundreds of workers lost their livelihoods. This is how they're affecting the average individual, and this is what they try to do. This is what economic warfare is meant to do, as well as the bombing campaigns that seem to be targeting over 14,000 civilian economic structures. We have to begin to recognize what's really going on here and not get distracted by these tabloid conjecture-based stories, even if they're true, which I'm willing to bet they're not likely going to pan out the way that everybody thinks they will. This is what's going on with your tax dollars around the world, despite their brief coverage and ignoring it today. The U.S.-backed Saudi coalition, U.S.-backed, is continuing to increase their war on the Yemeni people as they're wildly suffering. People are dying. 20 million set to starve by the end of the year, and they're now increasing their economic pressure on this country that is already falling apart. And the very clear effort here is to get them to turn to the United States for help, for money, for support, which is exactly the point. To get the population to seek support and in whatever way possible from the very people creating the problems they're suffering. This is how this is meant to work. Really let that set in and think about places like Syria and Iran and Venezuela and ask yourself how similar they are, how we're seeing the economy collapse and their currency collapse and the food prices go up. It is exactly what happens every single time when we have these U.S.-based economic warfare taking place, sanctions being a direct act of war. It's a sad reality to see what's going on and to realize that the people that are supposed to be working for you as Americans are in fact working for a foreign nation to help decimate a destitute population. It's sad, but we need to begin to face this reality and understand what's really going on, as opposed to wishing for the best and only seeing the worst, really refusing to see the worst and only watching what we want to watch. That's what mainstream media is really about, is to give us what we think we want to see while stoking the divide amongst ourselves so we fail to recognize what's really going on. Now, as these areas of extreme human suffering continue to intensify, Yemen being the most obvious example, Palestine, Venezuela, any number of them, obviously Yemen being the focus of today, and being funded and progressed with U.S. tax dollars, more and more propaganda and distraction measures will be pushed forward. We saw the mainstream media try to put this to bed with a one-off single day of wildly disingenuous coverage, and then go right back to the same tired tabloid conjecture. They know we're waking up to the reality of U.S. foreign policy and the truth of U.S. domestic policy, and they will create just about anything to keep us missing the point, including another false flag event. We must not allow these same tired lies to work. So please tune in every week, 2 p.m. Mountain Time, as I provide you with the tools to overcome these irrational claims and come to our rational conclusions about what's actually going on, even if that differs from my own, especially if that differs from my own. Today, there will be no research and review directly following this show, but I will be coming back tonight for a special late night version of research and review. So make sure you tune into that. And please check out the show notes below and all the independent sources. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.